Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Gary Graham Hughes with the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU, coordinated by the North Coast Environmental Center. The NEC is the publisher of a regional environmental newspaper, the Eco News, in which EPIC also publishes a page. Don't forget that you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Today, my guest is Southern Humboldt resident Tice Fraser, and we'd like to explore the environmental impacts of cannabis cultivation on the Eco News Report today. Thanks for being with us, Tice. It's really an honor to have you here.
Well, thanks a lot. I'm really glad to be up here on KHSU, and I think this is a really important environmental issue to talk about in Humboldt County, where obviously this is what our economy is, the cannabis economy. So it's a very appropriate show to have at this time.
Well, let's go ahead and dig in a little bit to this really crucial issue about the environmental impacts of cannabis cultivation. Clearly, it's getting more and more press, more and more attention now, and we really at EPIC endeavor to participate in a debate that helps identify the most egregious practices and encourages the community to move towards sustainability, as it were, and this and many other factors of a diversified economy. But let's check in a little bit about your background in this material, Tice. You're a Southern Humboldt resident. You've grown up around here, lived your whole life. But the idea of presenting on this material is not new to you. As a matter of fact, you presented at the Environmental Law Conference, the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference at the University of Oregon last year. What was the main substance of your presentation at ELAW?
Well, we were presenting the environmental impacts of the cannabis industry and just kind of giving a broad overlook. Tony Savaggio, who's a teacher here at HSU, was putting on the show, and along with him was Patty Clary, and she kind of covered the impacts of the different types of pesticides that are being used in the cannabis industry. And I talked kind of as someone who grew up with the industry and saw its evolution from being more of organic grown, kind of more small scale, and then to the more industrial indoor rural growing that was happening in my neighborhood.
Right, just this explosion of sort of an industrial style of growing cannabis. Now, Patty Clary from Californians for Alternatives to Toxics was on the panel, and Tony Savaggio as well.
Yep.
How was the presentation received?
Pretty well. I hadn't ever spoken at an event like that, and we had pretty much standing room. People were sitting on the floor and stuff, and people were interested in it. I was able to realize the kind of impact that the cannabis industry has beyond Humboldt County by going up there. This lady came up to me afterwards and was talking about when Proposition 19 was going to be passed. She was from British Columbia, and she found that everyone in British Columbia were doubling the amount of pot that they grew to try to beat legalization. Everyone was so panicked about legalization, and it was really causing an explosion in the pot industry. Everyone was doubling up, and here too. And so it was just interesting to see how our economy affects way broader area than just Humboldt County.
And this kind of goes with some of what we've talked about previously about how you've seen over the years that the cannabis industry has exploded, not just locally, but regionally, all over the western states and provinces. What other insights do you have along those lines as far as how big this industry really has gotten?
Well, it's one of those things is like, who knows how big it is? It's an underground industry. You know, in Humboldt County, we've seen electricity rates, I mean, the use of electricity, you know, go up by 50% since 2015 was passed. And so we know there's a lot more being grown, and it's speculated that it's California's number one crop as far as money being made off of it, which is just astounding, thinking that California is a state that produces as much food as many nations. So to be the top crop, it's huge.
But we're talking about an explosion of production in this industry in British Columbia, in Montana, Colorado, Oregon. Now there's medical marijuana
Mexico.
Bill in well as well. We look at the international impacts of a lot of this trade. But what do you think this means environmentally?
Well, how I got drawn into it is kind of noticing how it was changing in our area. And what was happening in our area, because of camp was so intense in the 80s, everyone was going into growing indoors, run off of diesel generators. And so we were seeing spills on the road. We were seeing the roads get trashed. And where I lived, I heard three generators running 24 hours a day in a place that's really rural that you'd hear a car go by every once in a while. So we had really tangible effects that we could hear and feel and smell. And so that's kind of how I got into addressing this issue.
Kind of looking at the energy intensive nature of the indoor aspect of the industry.
And that's really got me aware of it. And then as we started looking into it, we realized that it doesn't matter if it's a diesel generator that's powering it or a bigger centralized power plant, it's still throwing CO2 into the atmosphere. And so I was my basic thing was I was against the indoor aspects, but as we started addressing the indoor, we started realizing you can't exclude the outdoor because people are doing egregious practices with the outdoor growing now by just growing in such a large scale.
Well, we think some of that is probably what's most relevant to understanding local impacts of this industry, but let's continue to explore the national scale of this. You've looked into some of the studies that have come out around estimating energy use for indoor cannabis cultivation. What did you find impactful about that?
Well, with Evan Mills just had the study from Lawrence Livermore Labs, and he's speculating that 1% of energy use in the United States is to grow indoor marijuana. So it's rivaling the energy use of like computer servers. It's a major contributor. And, you know, when you look at how the energy is produced, half of it's coal. And coal, you know, gives us acid rain, gives us, you know, every pound of pot that's grown off of electric power produces a ton of CO2. So it's a big impact.
And that's nationally. That's not just California.
No, that's, you know, in California, they're thinking it might be 8% of household energy. And in Humboldt, it might be 50%.
50%. Yeah. An estimate of 50% of household energy is going into indoor cannabis cultivation. That's a remarkable figure. And it really touches on one of the reasons why we were compelled to discuss this topic on the Eco News Report at KHSU. These topics are fairly common on KMUD and Redwood Community Radio.
Somewhat.
In relative sense. But there has been an explosion of media coverage on this. And we really appreciate from the Environmental Protection Information Center the opportunity to collaborate with KHSU and the North Coast Environmental Center and be part of this team that's working on the Eco News Report. And we felt that this was a theme that would be really good to explore to ensure that the northern part of the county was having an opportunity to pitch into this debate as much as happening in other parts of the county. Let's continue taking a look at the growth of the industry. Some say that there was a real watershed mark when Proposition 19 was floated, the possibilities of legalization actually promoting a giant growth in the industry.
Well, I think a lot of people panicked just thinking, okay, this is going to be the last year I'm going to be able to make money. And a lot of people doubled up and grew twice as much as they ever did before.
And you feel like that was both indoor and outdoor?
Yeah.
Just across the board,
yeah.
People just...
But especially outdoor.
Especially outdoor. And then when we take a look at that, that kind of starts to bring us more into the local. I think the energy issues, really understanding energy use, the environmental impacts of that, the global environmental impacts, when we talk about climate change, the atmosphere, and what's happening with energy use, clearly on a nationwide level, this economic activity is using a great deal of energy, even more so California locally. But then locally, we also have the impacts on the landscape. What are some of the more serious impacts that you see happening out on the landscape with this activity?
probably the most egregious is the bulldozer work that's happening, you know, unpermitted and just kind of free for all. And the other aspect is just all the different people using the water. And so we're reducing the amount of water flow. Which is going to increase water temperatures in the creek. We're nutrient loading the creeks because of over fertilization, or just even fertilization. But you know, with a lot of this industrial practices, people are trying to pump so much weight out of their plants as they're using, you know, maybe four times as much fertilizer as they really need.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has an effect on algae blooms, which you know, cuts off the oxygen to aquatic life. And, you know, I think those are probably the main impacts of outdoor growing.
Here we're talking about water quantity, water quality, and then the use of machinery mostly for shaping the earth to promote the activity.
Yep.
Now, do you really think it's fair to say that what is happening now in terms of moving earth for this industry is as serious as what was happening in the heyday of the timber industry, as some have been noted to say?
No, it doesn't compare.
It seems in your
it doesn't compare.
A little bit different, but nonetheless, you mentioned specifically that you know this earth moving is of concern.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
you know it's an egregious practice, but to you know looking at what logging did, you know, they cut down trees everywhere. And then, you know, the spraying of 2,4-D and kind of practices, you know, there was a family that had a ranch down in the bottom of our hill that was pretty much decimated from 2,4-D, where, you know, from cancers and birth defects. And you know, it's so to categorize it in that same category, I just don't think it holds water.
So then another question is, do you think that everyone who is involved with this economy is moving huge amounts of earth?
No, definitely not.
No. It's the exception.
Definitely the exception.
Right. So you're feeling that this idea of, like, I need a bulldozer in order to terrace a large amount of space for new greenhouses is definitely egregious, but it's not something that everyone is doing.
No, but it's definitely happening. Like as Mark Lovelace has been talking about, and he has pictures that show these practices, and it's definitely real.
It's very real. The photos are striking, and the county does have ordinance for grading.
Yeah, but that's the thing about living in the Wild West.
Yes, right. But then it is worthy to note that there are several groups, for instance, in the Mattole area, both the Mattole Salmon Group and the Mattole Restoration Council, that have made efforts to help residents comply with the ordinance and to ensure that they're fulfilling their responsibilities before the county and getting permits for doing this kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
I want to check in a little bit more. We were talking about the impacts of the logging industry with the use of toxins and the spraying that went on in the past. But it definitely, the use of poisons in cannabis cultivation has been identified as a real environmental problem. And I wanted to ask you about that. What are the kinds of poisons that are being used and how might they affect the environment?
The most common poisons are things to control spider mites. And this is pretty much has to do with indoor only, but it's also happening now with greenhouse grows, which have a lot of the same problems being in enclosed monocultures that need it. And, you know, the two of the most commonly sprayed pesticides are Floramite and Avid, and these products aren't even legal in California. And they're legal in Oregon, but they aren't legal for food products. They're only allowed on ornamental. So basically what they're used for is to spray Christmas trees, and any bug that eats the Christmas tree dies. And so you're putting it on a plant that's ingested straight into the lungs, which is super scary, because when a healthy person eats an apple that has pesticides on it, your enzymes in your stomach can actually break down the pesticides to this extent. But when you're smoking, you're pulling poison straight into your bloodstream. There's no filter. It's going straight into your system.
Well, that seems to be something that consumers should be attentive to.
Absolutely.
I mean, us locally, we can be very concerned about what these poisons might be doing to our waterways or effects they might have on wildlife, but it seems like that would be a red flag for consumers out there.
And definitely it gets into our waterways too. And, you know, but the thing with poisons, it's so hard to point to was your cancer caused by this poison, but you get the cancer so many years later. So it's really hard to get the connection of to prove the poison caused the cancer.
Well, this use of poisons is actually one of the elements that has most encouraged EPIC to try to take action around the issue of industrial cannabis cultivation on public lands. And there are a lot of examples of situations where those who are growing on public lands have used inordinate amounts of poisons to control rodents.
Yeah,
and of course, that just puts the poison into the
food chain directly.
Yes, and endangered species are having problems with that. Pacific fisher and northern spotted owl are two that have been negatively affected by this. Along those lines, EPIC has made efforts to communicate with the United States Forest Service, most specifically the Mendocino National Forest, requesting that a detailed environmental impact study be done concerning the industrial cannabis cultivation occurring on our public lands. We definitely have a stance that our public lands are completely inappropriate for this economic activity, regardless of whether it were cannabis or tomatoes.
Or cattle.
Well, I guess one of our main goals is to see that the Forest Service would analyze the impacts of this activity in order that the impacts of this unregulated activity were taken into consideration in evaluating the cumulative impacts that would permit or allow other more traditional uses, whether it be logging or grazing or mining, in order that people really, especially the agencies, have the right information available to be able to make decisions about how to be using our public lands. But Tice, how do you feel that people in the community would receive a posture like this from an environmental organization where we stand up and say, you know, there's some things that are really taboo and growing cannabis on public lands is one of those?
I think you'll get a lot of support. You know, as a backpacker myself, I don't want to be in the woods and face someone with a gun. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You know, this is our public resource. We should feel safe and comfortable enjoying our wilderness experience.
Yeah, and wilderness is at risk. There's definitely evidence of these types of industrial grows being established in wilderness areas, designated wilderness. And this will be a very interesting year in that we're heading into a whole new season. And ostensibly, the federal government is getting ready to really up their presence. And we would really like to see the Forest Service address the environmental issues in a transparent way, really communicate to the public what exactly those issues are, how profound they are, and then also consider the fact that law enforcement, that eradication, doesn't address the environmental issues, that without real cleanup, that the environmental issues are not being taken care of, been dealt with in an appropriate manner. But we speak about cleanup, we speak about trying to make a big point about what's happening on public lands, but again, the conversation always comes back to what's happening on lands that aren't public, that belong to people, that are residential lands. And it really does seem that there's a full spectrum of activities out there. I mean, that spectrum including the indoor versus outdoor spectrum. What do you think, Tice, are some of the most critical environmental issues that we are facing right here in what we know as the Emerald Triangle that people could be addressing? Like, what are the issues? For instance, we talk about dewatering, we talk about water quality, we talk about water quantity, but it's, you know, how do we address that? What is something that could be done along those lines?
Well, I think just understanding where the environmental impacts are, you know, with a lot of the outdoor cultivation, you're getting definite feedback, but you can see the impacts. But when you're growing indoors and flicking a light on from the grid, it's kind of hard to figure your impacts. You have to figure out okay, what's the embodied energy of the building that's being used? That's its life is going to be shortened because you're growing pot in it. What's the, you know, how much fuel is being used to power your lights and fans? And you know, where do your nutrients come from? Because basically, especially growing hydroponic, it's just, you know, it's all the products are being mined from the earth, and then they're being flushed down the toilet into the municipal sewer systems. And so all these damages kind of disappear, and it seems like a clean industry because it's really hard to quantify. So people need to start realizing how much power they're using and really be honest about their impacts and not be so mercenary about it.
Mm-hmm. You know, right.
You know, it can't be profit above all. We have to respect
So it seems like you're kind of touching in a little bit what we'd call the ecological footprint of the activity. So mm-hmm. it's not just, you know, a question of what's happening in a watershed, specifically about how much water someone might be using, or a question of how much earth they're moving around, if any, but really more a question of what the global impacts are of this industry. Where do most of the fertilizers come from that people use?
All over the world.
when you see a stack of, you know, back guano products in the store,
from islands, you know, in the South Pacific and stuff, and you know, so you have these industries that are, you know, shipping. You have all these miles that all these nutrients are shipped, all this peat moss mined from Canada. So you're kind of creating this whole agricultural system that's based on mining instead of actually working on developing your own soil and growing your soil and, you know, a living soil. And you're just mining stuff, dumping it. And it's just so short term. It's completely unsustainable.
It's not sustainable in the long run. So what are some things that people could be doing in terms of developing more of a permaculture approach, as it were? Because it seems like when you start talking about developing soil, when you start talking about looking at these types of ecological footprints, you really do start getting back to the heart of some of the concepts with permaculture.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of ensuring that our agriculture is sustainable and
integrated. And which is, you know, right now our agriculture is so unsustainable, you know, since the invention of chemical fertilizers, we've doubled our food production. But it's kind of interesting, a side thing that's happened is our food has less nutrients in it because it's chemically produced. And suddenly we've doubled our medical cost because of obesity, and we aren't getting our nutrients. So it's just this whole cycle that's completely out of whack. And I think, you know, that more sustainable agricultural practices, no matter what you're growing, is really going to be the key to how we survive in the future.
So do you really think that there's a green way to be involved with this green business, as it were?
I do. And it's not easy, and a lot of it's scale. Like, you could be on the more egregious practices, and if you're doing it at a small scale, you're not going to have the same kind of impact. But, you know, I think it's really going to come down to learning how to grow soil and composting and arts like that that are really going to be the hope for the future.
And how long do you think this kind of transition might take for, you know, between, say, 5 years ago and now? We've seen a lot of awareness, both in the fact that more and more people are pointing out the environmental problems with the industry, but also clearly a lot of people connected with the industry have been making efforts to address water use, to address this overuse of fertilizers and such. And even the questions of scale, how much time do you think the community will need to actually make this transition? Is it possible?
It's hard. You know, I think that we have a chance by influencing people to make better choices, but because it's an illegal industry, it's really tricky. So a lot of the problems, like the county can't really make more intelligent medical marijuana laws because the federal government won't let them. So this whole problem with prohibition feeds into this problem because it's an underground economy.
And that really becomes a topic for a whole nother show.
Yeah, yeah.
My name is Gary Graham Hughes. I'm the executive director at the Environmental Protection Information Center, and I've been speaking with Southern Humboldt resident Tice Fraser about the environmental impacts of cannabis cultivation. This is a very tough topic to dig into at this point in the game, in that there are so many elements at play. And of course, the nervousness that goes with being public at all about talking about these issues. Yeah. I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to be here with us today on KHSU talking about this stuff. The stuff, as I say generally, is really such a part of our reality here on the North Coast now, no matter how you look at it. It does seem that there's going to be a necessity to identify egregious practices and really make sure that those crimes are addressed, and at the same time to continue to build a vocabulary about best practices. There's really an amazing metaphor between what has occurred with the timber industry over the years with what is currently happening right now with the cannabis industry. And so with that, do you really see a road forward? I mean, we want to make sure that we end this discussion with some forward-thinking thoughts, and also really be sure that listeners who are out there get some vocabulary, have some ideas of what they might be doing or sharing with neighbors or sharing with people that they know to be incorporating some of these ideas into their work.
Well, I think part of the way forward is we have to transition out of indoor growing. Indoor growing is so hard on the environment that even like the most egregious practices, like a huge greenhouses that can produce 1,000 pounds a year, is actually saving 1,000 tons of carbon from going into the air a year that indoor would have produced. So it's at least displacing that. So first of all, we have to transition to growing in the sun. And the second part of it, I think, is we really have to work on scale and work on small farmers. And I really just don't want to see the industry go into to big farms and that model of the industrial agriculture.
Well, it seems like something really important to explore as we get closer here. What is big scale? What is small scale? Can you throw out any sort of parameters there that people might be able to work with?
Well, you know, it's to tell people how much money they need to live is kind of a touchy subject. But I would like to see people making a middle class living and not be upper class. I would like to see it, you know, I'd like to see that in all industries. I would like to see not CEOs not making too much money and have a much more horizontally integrated economy.
And that's where we start getting into economic justice issues, which is a subject for a whole other show.
But it ties right in as well.
I really appreciate your willingness to be here today, Tice. It's phenomenal. How can people continue to keep track of some of the work that you're doing? You mentioned that you occasionally write articles for High Times.
Yeah, I've been writing an eco-cannabis article in High Times, their medical marijuana quarterly. And also there's a website, Grow It in the Sun, that we contribute to as well.
GrowItInTheSun.com. Is it?
Yeah,
how is it?
Yeah, I think it is.
GrowItInTheSun.com. Well, check it out. And Tice, again, thank you very much. My name is Gary Graham Hughes, and I've been your host for this past half hour of the Eco News Report on KHSU. I've been with Tice Fraser, Southern Humboldt resident. You can find more information about this show at khsu.org on the audio archives page, where you can listen to this again, share it with friends. These programs will be archived there for 2 weeks after they air. If you have any questions or comments about the program, please be sure to call KHSU's listener comment line at 707-826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, and is coordinated by the North Coast Environmental Center. We'd really like to thank Fred McLaughlin, extraordinaire, for his engineering. And be sure to join us again here on the Eco News Report next Thursday at 1:30 on KHSU. Thank you very much.